Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
I've got a legal story I found on my own that I think you'll find interesting. And occasionally we talk about people who misbehave, whether they're jurors or judges or attorneys or litigants or whoever. And in this case, it's jurors doing the wrong thing. People who are on a jury disobeying the jury instructions and getting in trouble. So this is a case that came down from the Michigan Court of Appeals just a couple days ago. But this case has been tied up in the courts for quite a while, and it's pretty scary. So it's the people of the state of Michigan versus two gentlemen named Searcy and Ewing. Searcy and Ewing. And like I said, it's rather convoluted, but you got to stick with me on this one. I assure you, it's worth the ride. So these two guys are convicted arising from a murder where another man was also injured, and this happened a while back, okay, 2009. So in 2009, the crime occurred, these two guys were arrested, and then they were put on trial. So the interesting thing about the trial is that there were some witnesses who said, yep, these guys did it, and there were some witnesses who said, no, these other guys did it, and we've got alibi witnesses, we've got all kinds of stuff. So at trial, defendants presented the testimony of a witness who claimed that two other people carried out the shooting, including that one of the guys admitted it, and then one of the gentlemen's mothers testified that he was at a funeral repast, and there were witnesses to that. And a funeral repast, for those of you who don't know, is a dinner held after a funeral. And so there's a bunch of people there. So the man had an alibi. So there's disputed evidence in this case. Now, there's often disputed evidence in a case. That's nothing new. But deliberations began on November 11th, 2010. 4 days later, the jury sent a note out saying, we're deadlocked. We are deadlocked. Can we call it a day and go home? Hung jury. And the trial court, however, said, no, you guys have got to continue deliberating and do what you can to break the deadlock. The very next day, the deadlock was broken. Boom, guilty. Both defendants, all counts. So one of the men filed a motion for a new trial, presenting an affidavit from a juror. And the juror said that at the trial, which by the way is a joint trial, both defendants on trial in front of the same jury, that the juror signed an affidavit saying that two other jurors used the internet to do research on the case. One of them did internet research about gang hierarchies. And the other person did internet research poking into the defendant's Facebook page. And now, when you're on a jury, you are read jury instructions. They're called jury instructions. You, as a member of the jury, should know that those instructions are directed at you. So one of the jury instructions says that when you are here listening to this case, hearing testimony and evidence being presented, you are to consider that evidence and that evidence only when you go back and deliberate. You are not to conduct your own tests. You're not to go out and do site visits. You're not supposed to go and do internet research. You're not supposed to go to the library and do research. You are literally supposed to go back in the room and discuss what was presented in open court. So the person who signed the affidavit said that two jurors used the internet to research various issues related to the case, including photographs from one of the men's Facebook pages, the victim's eulogy, and information about gang hierarchies and culture, and that this information was discussed during deliberations. And so the weird part is that when that was brought before the trial court denied the motion, said, no, convictions will stand. So this case has a tortured history from that point forward. Because the men filed an appeal, which was apparently denied. They then filed a habeas corpus motion in federal court saying we're being held unlawfully in violation of our civil rights. And the federal courts eventually ordered the state court hold a hearing and at least find out what actually went down. So the trial court said, fine, we'll hold a hearing. And at the evidentiary hearing in Wayne County, which was held 9 years after the trial, there's 9 years of wrangling on this. The woman who signed the affidavit testified about the information that other jurors brought into the jury room during deliberations. She testified that one juror looked up Facebook photographs of one of the men. And she testified the pictures were not brought into the jury room, the pictures from Facebook, but they were discussed. So this one juror is saying, look, I looked at the guy's Facebook page. Here's the pictures I saw. And they used that information as part of the conviction. She also testified that a juror mentioned that they had read a eulogy on the internet and discussed experiments the jurors conducted regarding eyewitness testimony. And experiments, it's a borderline thing. If somebody says, hey, look, if I was here and you were there, you couldn't see me, right? That's not an experiment. But there's a fine line between discussing what was happening in court versus going out and trying to recreate it. This woman here, though, testified that she was unsure whether the two men were guilty and that she was holding out. And that's one of the reasons that the jury deadlocked. But she found it particularly troubling that somebody else had confessed to the crime that the man was being accused of. And so she was like, hey, look, I'm not going to convict this guy if someone else confessed to the crime. And at that point, another juror said, well, look, I've got this information I found on the internet about gangs and gang hierarchies. And she explained that in a gang hierarchy, someone else might confess to a crime to take care of a higher ranking gang member. And apparently that was enough to persuade her to say, okay, fine, I'll change my vote. So the question then becomes, did these guys get a fair trial? So the Court of Appeals here says, no, they did not. During deliberations, the members of a jury are permitted to consider only the evidence that was admitted in open court. Now, some people might say, Steve, but wait, does it really hurt them if the jury goes and does research on their own to double-check this stuff? Well, yeah, it does. A jury's consideration of extraneous information that is not introduced at trial constitutes a deprivation of a defendant's Sixth Amendment rights of confrontation, cross-examination, and assistance of counsel. So what I'm getting at here and what they're getting at here is, let's suppose there actually is some concept of a gang hierarchy where a lower-ranking gang member will plead guilty to a major offense to save a higher-ranking gang member. The prosecution could, if they wanted to, introduce that in evidence. And then the defendant's attorneys could seek to keep it out, cross-examine on it, or simply explain it away to the jury, if that was actually relevant. And one of the reasons that they don't want jurors looking stuff up or doing research on their own is, a lot of times the prosecution and the defendants know about some of these issues that don't get into trial. And they don't get in for a variety of reasons, some of which is they're not relevant. Or who knows? But the point is that if that was true, the prosecution would have used it. The fact that they didn't use it tells us something, okay? So where there's evidence to suggest the verdict was affected by influences external to the trial proceedings, courts may consider juror testimony to impeach a verdict. So that's why they can go back and ask the jurors, what were you guys doing back there? Any conduct, even if misguided, that is inherent in the deliberative process is not subject to challenge or review. But again, it does appear that this was misguided and it did affect it. So to obtain a new trial, a defendant must first prove the jury was exposed to extraneous influences. Well, here they clearly were. Next, the defendant must show that the extraneous influences created a real and substantial possibility that they could have affected the jury's verdict. And here we have at least one juror going, yeah, that's why I changed my vote. So it does look like the vote was done based on this information that was brought in via the internet by two jurors. It's two different jurors who did this, who were violating their instructions. Instructions said specifically, you can only discuss what you learned in the box. And I don't know if the jury instructions go so far as to say, do not do this, do not do this, do not. But I've actually seen a judge reading instructions and occasionally just throwing in afterthoughts and actually saying, this means don't do internet research, don't look at the newspapers, da-da-da-da-da. I've seen them say that. So turning to the merits, the prosecution concedes that extrinsic information was brought into the jury deliberations and that the one juror changed her verdict after hearing about the information about gang hierarchies. It is the prosecution's position, however, that her verdict was affected by the arguments based on the internet research, but not the information itself. And this is a great example of one where the prosecution hates to just admit look, we won one, but it wasn't fair and square. We'll give the guy a new trial. They're actually still arguing, saying, well, look, it was the argument based on the internet, not the internet itself. So, Court of Appeals writes, contrary to the prosecution's argument, her testimony at the evidentiary hearing makes clear that her decision was affected by the gang information in and of itself. She testified that the one juror reported she looked up information about gangs, that all gangs have, like, a pecking order. When asked if this information affected her deliberations, she answered affirmatively and said, and this is a quote, I was feeling that there was, that things hadn't been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and a lot of that was based on the fact that another person had confessed, and she brought that information in to show me. I kept saying, why would anyone confess to a murder they didn't? And she brought that in to show me why this other person, that he would have confessed because the gang told him to. So that's why she changed her mind. So she repeatedly confirmed that the information that was brought into the deliberations about gang hierarchies on the internet caused her to change her vote. So the point is, the prosecution never mentioned gang hierarchies. The defendants never mentioned gang hierarchies. No witnesses ever talked about gang hierarchies. And yet one juror went on the internet and came in the next day all fired up talking about gang hierarchies. And I'm laughing. I know some people are going to see this is not a laughing matter. Well, on some levels it is. I've taken seminars on trial practice. I taught trial practice. One of the things that attorneys fear is what happens when the door to the juror room closes and deliberations begin. Both sides hope that the jurors will follow the instructions. We do. We actually want them to follow the instructions. Because if they don't follow the instructions, we can't predict which way they're going to go. And if they go horribly off the rails, it might not be in our favor. I'd rather have them follow the jury instructions and just come back with a verdict. And I've seen interviews with jurors after cases and trials where I'm like, oh my gosh, who'd have thought that would happen? And so even following the instructions, they will occasionally go off in left field or right field or some other field, depending on what sport you're playing, and come up with some strange theory. And I've actually heard them say, like, we convicted the guy or didn't convict the guy based on, and they came up with, like, the prosecution presents theory A, and the defense rebuts theory A, and the jury comes back and goes, oh, we found him guilty, but we did it on this. And you're like, what? And sometimes it'll stand up, sometimes it won't. So here, where no one mentioned gang hierarchies, and one juror goes on the internet and does a bunch of research, comes back and goes, hey, do you guys know about these gang hierarchies? Do you hear about these gangs? And it's bad because these guys are being given a new trial now. 9 years later. 9 years later. And this is a great example of one where these guys could win and have still spent 9 years in prison. So the Court of Appeals says, we also note that although Burns, that's the juror, indicated that the gang hierarchy information was the extraneous information that ultimately changed her vote, we cannot completely ignore the other external information brought into deliberations. For example, she testified that one juror found Facebook photographs of one of the defendants and shared the information during deliberations. And she recalls one juror stating during that discussion, you know they're guilty of something. Based on a photograph found on Facebook, you know they're guilty of something. To sum up, the Court of Appeals wrote, defendants demonstrated that extraneous information was brought to the jury for deliberations and that information was used by the jurors to support their verdict. Further, given the juror's testimony and the trial court's conclusion that her testimony was highly credible, it is clear that it was the extraneous information that convinced her to change her vote from not guilty to guilty. Accordingly, the trial court did not err by finding that defendants carried their burden on the motion for a new trial. So the parties will get a new trial. And like I said, procedurally, this case is a nightmare. And they sought a new trial at the beginning. It was denied. They went to federal court. That went up on appeal. Federal Court of Appeals said, you guys got to hold an evidentiary hearing. Sent back down to the trial court for an evidentiary hearing, after which the trial court says, fine, we're going to give these guys a new trial. And at that point, the prosecutors appealed that to the Michigan Court of Appeals. So Michigan Court of Appeals heard it, the Federal Court of Appeals heard it, and there were several hearings in the trial court, These guys are going to get a new trial after spending 9 years in prison. And so, again, the whole upshot of this is the jurors were given jury instructions specifically that said, do not do your own research. Do not go out and try to figure things out on your own. Simply watch what happens in the courtroom, what comes from the jury box or from the witness box, you know, the testimony and evidence that gets admitted. And beyond that, outside these walls of this courtroom, you're not to consider anything. And instead, they went on the internet, did research on gang hierarchy, and were looking at Facebook pages of defendants, which is specifically something they weren't supposed to do. So crazy, crazy story, but these guys will get a new trial. And like I said, this just came down the other day from the Michigan Court of Appeals. Questions or comments, put them below. Let's talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. You don't learn to walk by following rules. You learn by doing and by falling over.